Welcome to Food for Thought, the place to explore, celebrate, and manifest a life motivated and defined by unconditional compassion and optimal wellness. My name is Colleen Patrick-Gaudreau, and I'm your host. You can find me at joyfulvegan.com and on social media, especially on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And of course, you can subscribe to Food for Thought podcast at iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you're enjoying this free podcast called Food for Thought, I just ask that you share it with others, leave ratings and reviews, and of course, support this podcast. You can go to patreon.com/ColleenPatrickGaudreau to make this podcast possible if you listen, if you value it, especially if you already subscribe and you get anything out of it at all. Please become a supporter. You can also just go to joyfulvegan.com to donate. Thank you in advance. Today's topic is zero waste, vegan, and living with cats. I am very excited to share this episode with you. I created a similar one for YouTube, replete with cutaways and links to products I recommend, but I wrote it originally as a podcast. I just created it as a YouTube video first, and since they are two different mediums, of course, I'm not someone who's inclined to just repurpose one for the other because they're completely different mediums. And so here I am recording this one just for you. This is another reason why your support matters. You make this research, the recording, the filming, the editing, the writing, the posting, the marketing, all of this possible. So again, just go to joyfulvegan.com or patreon.com to support this podcast. I also want to remind you of a couple things. Registration for the Compassion in Action 2018 conference is closing soon, so grab your spot before it's too late. We sold out of the platinum level. Can't wait to see all of you here at my house. But there are seats left for the gold level. So go to compassioninactionconference.com and register right away. I am very excited. You will get your schedule for the weekend right away. And that includes sessions that I'm leading called Unconditional Compassion, the 10 Habits of Highly Effective Advocates. We've also got Practicing Self-Compassion. We've got Advocacy in the Workplace or Turning Your Passion into Profession by Stephanie Redcross. We've got Effective Types of Advocacy by Christy Middleton and myself. I didn't mention, by the way, that Self-Compassion is led by Ari Nessel, who is the founder of the Pollination Project, which is an amazing organization. And then, of course, we've got Going Zero Waste by Catherine Kellogg. We've got an open Q&A with me, lots of group work, lots of time together, lots of questions, engaging together, lots of food and fun. We've got boat rides planned. And for the first time this year, we're providing breakfast and lunch for everyone on Saturday, thanks to Planted Table. Planted Table is a company based here in the San Francisco Bay Area, and they deliver plant-based, heart-healthy, delicious meals to your home. It's like having your own personal chef. And here's what's more, this is so exciting. They're zero waste. They're vegan, they're zero waste, they're serving the San Francisco Bay Area. Meals are delivered right to your door in their insulated bag and in these beautiful glass containers that when you already have a regular schedule with them, you just leave the containers out for them. You rinse them all out, of course, just give them a little wash. And then they pick up the empties, drop off your new meals for the week. I am so impressed. The food is absolutely delicious. The women behind the company have so much integrity, and they're actually cooking right in the old Encuentro restaurant space. You know, you've heard me talk about Encuentro restaurant here in Oakland. They're doing pop-ups once a month, by the way. They're not completely closed, but they are doing pop-ups once a month. But for the other time, the ladies at Planted Table are using the Encuentro space to cook their delicious meals. So go to plantedtable.com, get a delicious meal delivered to your home. You can just try it out, tell them I sent you, or you can experience their deliciousness and their awesomeness at this year's Compassion in Action Conference. So again, plantedtable.com for them, compassioninactionconference.com. To register, what are you waiting for? I will warn you, this conference is not for anyone who wants to stay angry or cynical. So I just want to warn you. It's for people who want to be the most joyful, the most compassionate, the most effective ambassadors of compassion you can be. So just letting you know, if you're interested in that, especially at a time like this when everyone thinks the world is coming to an end, I'm here to tell you it's not, and I'm here to tell you why it's not, and you can learn all about the skills it takes to hold that perspective and to be effective and to be joyful. So compassionandactionconference.com. And I have one more piece of exciting news. Yes, you're just going to have to wait to the content. And if you've already forwarded through it, you're going to miss the best announcement. The demand for the CPG vegan trips is so ridiculously high that, are you ready for it? We have added more trips for 2019. So, you know, we sold out of Thailand. That was our first one. Well, we had some Italy ones, but this was really our first one that I've been doing with World Vegan Travel, my partners in Compassion. I call them Bridie and Seb. So we sold out of Thailand. We sold out of Vietnam. We sold out of Alsace. We sold out of Rwanda within 48 hours. So we added a second Rwanda. And so what we're doing is we added more trips to 2019. So now, and so here's what we've got. We've got a Vietnam in 2019, in April 2019. We've got a Thailand in October of 2019. And we're adding an Alsace again, another Alsace, France for Christmas again. So the Christmas market's really magical time. I want to just let you know that if you have any qualms or reservations about Vietnam, we're still a little curious as to why that was the lowest turnout for all of our trips. I went to Vietnam on crutches. I didn't want to miss that trip so badly. And it was absolutely incredible. So I plan on doing a Vietnam episode. The animal sanctuaries we visited were just out of this world. The people who were doing work to protect animals there, the food was just fantastic. The natural beauty. We had such a fantastic time, and I want you to go to Vietnam. So I want you to go to cpgtrips.com or cpgvegantrips.com. Either one will get you there. And I want you to take a look at the itineraries. So don't miss out. You've got a year. Well, you've got 9 months. No, 10 months for Vietnam. So sign up today. Do not miss this trip. I've put a video up. We're getting testimonials up for you to see. Don't miss this trip to Vietnam. It's just absolutely incredible. Thailand and Alsace. Okay, so cpgvegantrips.com. Now, I'm thrilled that the zero waste episodes I've been doing are inspiring so many of you. Keep your questions coming. If you're not already following me on Instagram, you want to do that because you're going to want to see these daily posts and tips and inspiration that I'm sharing with you. Of course, make sure you subscribe to the blog at joyfulvegan.com. And by the way, congratulations to the winners of the EnviroCycle compost bins. Thanks to everyone who entered the contest. I was really impressed. We had like 1,000 entries for this contest. And I am so excited. This content is really resonating with you. It's really exciting for me as well. I'm asked a lot about what I feed my cats from a vegan point of view. It's probably one of the highest watched, the most watched videos that I've made and most listened to podcast episode. It's probably the top three questions, one of the top three questions I get. But I'm also asked a lot about how to reduce the ecological footprint of cats from a zero waste, low waste perspective. Now, many of you are familiar with my adorable kitties, Charlie and Michiko. Before Charlie and Michiko, I had Simon and Schuster. And then we also adopted in a little girl named Cassandra. None of them are with us anymore, but I have Charlie and Michiko. And of course, if you follow me on social media at all, you can see their scrumptious faces. I talked about how in the video it was very difficult to pick the photos because I have a gazillion photos of them. So they're very cute, but they do have a pretty high ecological footprint like we all do. And I've been doing my best to reduce my waste in the world. And that includes, of course, reducing the waste that is created because of my cats. Now I'm going to do an episode on kind of animal companions in general. So I will be covering dogs, but because I have cats and that's really first and foremost for me, cats are first. Cats are first. I didn't say cats are always like just first. It doesn't have to be a competition. It's not a competition. Okay. So the three main areas that I identified when we examine the footprint that cats have is toys or enrichment, as I'd rather say, food and litter. So when we look at toys, I'm going to just get the easiest category out of the way. Anyone who lives with felines knows the easiest thing to do in terms of toys and enrichment for cats is all you need is an empty cardboard box. That's all you need. You need nothing else. For those of you who do not know this, cats cannot resist even when they can't fit. There is actually an adorable cat. I don't remember his name. He's a little Japanese cat on YouTube. And I think the entire channel just consists of this little cat trying to get into every size box. Like, I mean, a jewelry box. Because cats will just try to fit in any box. And there's actually a whole theory about something around them feeling safe. So if you actually draw a square on, say, the floor, kitchen floor, with tape, they will actually go sit in that little, inside the square. So there's something about them being inside a square that makes them feel safe. I don't know. It's just adorable. So our house looks like a shanty town when we do have cardboard boxes because I leave the boxes out for the cats to play in until they get bored of them. And then I, of course, if you listened to the compost episode, I compost them. And that's number one. So if you're ever at a loss as to what kind of toys to get for cats, you do not have to buy them. You just ask your neighbors if you could have a box before they throw it. Usually they're probably going to throw into the recycling bin, not the compost bin, but they can give you the box first and you can let your cats have a go. There is also something about paper. They like the sound of paper. So, I mean, this is the best thing about cats. You don't need to go out and buy plastic toys for them. They like paper. They like aluminum foil, tin foil. So you can just crunch either one up into a ball. They like the crinkly sound. You've got a toy. You've got a toy. You can also take something like a sock and put catnip in them. You can create a little wand for them to chase and jump. I mean, that requires like a stick and a string. So you don't have to go out and buy, you know, one of those plastic wands with a ribbon on it. Now I have, because this is before I was thinking about my plastic consumption, I do still have that, and I'll probably have it forever in the bad sense of the word, because the plastic wand will probably last forever. But in the sense of, you know, really valuing it, because remember, that's what zero waste is about. There's no reason, I mean, unless Charlie breaks it, and I say Charlie because he's the one who tends to play with that one, we should have it forever. But if you want to make your own, you can just, you know, you can get a little stick, you can put ribbon on the end of it, you can put just even string on the end of it. And when we hike, I often find feathers on the ground, either hawks or vultures whose feathers have dropped. I always pick up the feathers and bring them home, and the cats love them. I throw them around. They love to chase them, but they're also great to tie into the end of those little ribbons. So you've got toys, plastic-free, for cats. You don't even have to go out and buy anything at all. I did go out and buy, this is again, before I was really thinking of the materials I was buying for my cats. Although, as I think about this, what I'm about to say, it's all cardboard, is the scratchy posts, little scratchy things. So if you go look at the YouTube video, you really just see any picture of my cats online somewhere, you'll find them sitting on these little loungy, little chaise lounge, little couchy things. They're made of cardboard and they love them to bits and bobbles. I cannot believe how much they love these things. Michiko lays on them every single day. Actually, it's lies on them. Do you know that? It's not lay. She lies on the little loungy thing every single day. And because they're made of cardboard, I'll be able to put them in our compost. I'll shred them first and put them in our compost. Another thing you can do is toilet paper rolls before you compost your toilet paper rolls. And when I say compost, I mean shred first and then compost. You can give them the toilet paper rolls to play with. Put something else inside, put some catnip inside the little toilet paper rolls. Or if you still have paper towel rolls, you can do the same thing. And my cats love shoes. I don't know what to tell you about that, but my cats love shoes. I do want to hear if your cats love shoes as well. My cats love rolling around shoes. The stinkier they are, the more they like them. I don't know what to say. And as I mentioned, catnip. I do have fresh catnip plants out in the garden, so they go outside with me, so they roll around, and they love the fresh catnip, but you can also get dry catnip. You can also dry the fresh catnip. And so they love the catnip either. You can put it in, I mean, again, I've had cotton toys that I've purchased over the years, but you can also put them in an old sock or something like that. So you've got lots of options without having to do anything at all. I do bring my cats outside, as many of you have heard and seen over the years, but they get supervised time with me. They do not go out unsupervised, and they stay by my side. So it is something that does add to their enrichment. It adds to their quality of life. If you're unable to do that or don't want to do that, absolutely fine. Of course, you're already making sure they have fresh air, fresh access, you know, access to sunshine, etc. So that is something that I think really important, is just doing something that gives them extra enrichment. People ask me all the time how I enable my cats to stay by my side. I've joked that it's called parenting. I mean, it does require that I pay attention to them. It's not like being mindless and letting them outside and then not thinking about them. It is being a parent, and I do have to pay attention to them. I've trained them, for lack of a better word, over the years by my voice, by treats. They know what their limitations are. They know what their boundaries are. People don't think cats can be quote unquote trained. You're wrong. Cats can be. They don't have the same history of breeding and breeding for purpose the way dogs have over the years. And so they're less inclined to please their human because they've never had to, like, because that's part of what's so amazing about cats and so different about cats, is that they have always been very independently minded. And so people just didn't think then they could be trained, but they can be. And so treats definitely help. And it definitely keeps Charlie by my side because he is very, very food motivated. Cat beds are, I guess, something to consider, but honestly, I don't think anybody has to go out and buy a separate cat bed. So if you already are, if you're in the middle of adopting a cat and you don't have a cat bed, I mean, honestly, I think you don't really need to. And then, of course, any of these things can be found in secondhand stores. I would wash really well whatever items you get from a secondhand store that's cat-related, because they're very sensitive to smell and other cats' smells, and they're very territorial. So it could make them a little upset. So I would just wash really well whatever items you get, if it's a scratching post or toys or anything like that. But that's definitely an option. People also ask me about how to deal with the cat hair. Everyone knows if you have a cat, because you see cat hair all over your clothes. I went to the dentist once. And I was in the chair, and he says, "So," as I'm, you know, getting my teeth clean, he said, "So, how many cats do you have?" And I said, "Oh my God, how did you know I had cats? That's amazing." It's because there was fur all over the front of my shirt. So I was quite embarrassed. I didn't quite realize it. But you can just, you know, use rubber gloves if you already have them. I do have a link into the page for today's episode for a lint brush that has a wooden handle with rubber bristles. It's not plastic. So if you're interested in that, you can find lint rollers in secondhand stores, and you might already have one that's left over. So that's all I have to say about toys and enrichment, beds and cat fur. Okay. The second area to talk about, really important, is food. Now, we're talking about cats here, not dogs, and being obligate carnivores. Of course, their diet means they have a pretty heavy eco-footprint, because meat-based diets for humans and animals alike have much larger ecological footprints than plant-based diets, because it takes a lot of land and a lot of water and food to feed pigs and cows and sheep and chickens and turkeys and farmed fish. Yes, ideally millions of cats would not need homes, and ideally all animals would be vegetarian, including humans. But as it is, cats need homes. And I love sharing my home with cats. And as obligate carnivores, cats are not herbivores. Now, I have another video where I talk about the fact that I feed my cats meat, and I'm aware that I'm weighing the lives and well-being of my cats over the consequences of meat production. It's one of the reasons I'm really excited about the potential for cultured meat to help mitigate this. And of course, in the meantime, if humans and humans who have dogs who are not obligate carnivores eliminated or at least reduced their consumption of animal flesh and fluids, we'd go a long way in reducing the environmental devastation caused by the production of animal-based meat, dairy, and eggs. So don't do nothing, because you can't do everything. Do something, anything. Having said that, research has been done to determine the carbon footprint when it comes to producing different types of animal-based meat. Of course, to the animals who live and don't want to die, it's all the same. They all want to live. But what I'm strictly looking at here is the environmental effects of one type of animal flesh over another. A 2014 study in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences found that producing a kilogram of chicken results in about 3.7 kilograms of carbon dioxide, while a kilogram of pork, I'm using all this, these are not my words, comes with 24 kilograms of carbon dioxide. So 1 kilogram of chicken, 3.7 kilograms of carbon dioxide, 1 kilogram of pork, 24 kilograms of carbon dioxide, beef, 1 kilogram of beef, it's 1,000 kilograms of carbon dioxide, which of course is worrisome considering that this greenhouse gas is largely responsible for the significant warming of the Earth's climate. Now, that's not counting the livestock's water usage footprint, which dwarfs that of agricultural crops, plant crops. And when it comes to land animals, as you can see, chicken has a smaller footprint over beef, yes, even grass-fed beef. And for years, I've been feeding my cats aquatic animals, the farming or fishing of which, either one, definitely has a smaller carbon footprint than all other animal proteins on average, any of the land animals. So it's tough, right? I mean, it's tough. It's hard. It's really hard to quantify this stuff. And yet I'm doing the best I can. So, when it comes to seafood, aquatic animals, we've got wild caught, we've got farm raised. Now, I've been feeding Charlie and Michiko shrimp and tuna made by Natural Balance, and I'm doing more research into finding more details out about how they source the animals they do, but I'm pretty certain it's not wild caught fish. I'm pretty certain it's farm raised, but I've got some more work to do about that. There's another type of food I give them, which is just for a treat for them, and that is wild caught. That's tiki cat. It's too expensive to feed them as a regular diet for them, but I do feed it to them as a treat, and that's wild caught. But I'm pretty certain that the Natural Balance is farm raised. So in short, if you have cats, choosing animal protein lower down on the food chain is going to have a smaller footprint than those higher up. Of the land animals, chicken has the smallest, beef has the largest, lamb and pork are not far behind beef. To be honest, I'm really glad I'm vegan. Now, to be clear, I feed my cats only canned food. I don't feed them dry food. And that decision goes back over 20 years ago, when one of my male cats, Simon, kept getting blocked, that is, crystals formed in his bladder and he couldn't pass them through his urethra. Thus, we had to catheterize him several times, which is not something you want to do, until I changed his food from dry to wet to make sure he was getting a healthy amount of water each day. It took care of the problem and he never got blocked again. And that is one of the reasons I've only ever given my cats now, at this point, only canned food. Eating a kibble-only diet, cats would have to drink something like a cup of water a day to get the necessary amount of water, which they can get when they're eating canned food. Now, males tend to be more prone to this issue than females because their urethras are more narrow. And even though I do have a boy and a girl now, I'm not going to fix what's not broken. I'm not going to give Michiko one kind of food and Charlie the other. They're both doing well on canned food, and I'm not going to change that. Now, it just so happens that because I feed them canned food, from a zero waste perspective, I didn't have to change anything about their food. I rinse out their cans, and along with wine bottles, they're pretty much the only things that get put in the recycling bin at this point. Aluminum is 100% recyclable, so I feel better about that than if I were accumulating plastic bags, say from dry kibble. However, if you do feed your cats dry food, you might want to look at your local store that sells bulk items. You may be surprised. You may be really surprised to find that some of them might sell cat food and dog food in bulk bins. I don't mean bulk like a Costco kind of thing. I mean literally in bulk bins. The one thing, but you know, do the best you can is what we're all doing, right? The one thing I did have to change was the treats I give my cats, and they do get treats every day because, well, they're spoiled, but also because Charlie's very food motivated, and it's one of the ways I keep him close to me when we go outside. And for years, I've been feeding them greenies for cats. And I just realized that the aluminum bag they came in was not recyclable. I called them to find out, and it's not recyclable. So I came up with such a brilliant plan that I am so excited about, but I'm not sure it's going to work, is I realized that one of my local stores here that has an amazing bulk section has dry cat food in bulk. It's a wellness, right? Wellness. I think it's called, I used to feed them wellness a long time ago. And so I got a jar of those dry cat food to give my cats as treats. You see what I'm talking about here? That way I'll use the cat kibble, the kibble as treats so that it's all zero waste and I don't have to have a packaging. The thing is, I did give some to them. Michiko had a bellyache last week, and it was the only new factor was that I had given them some of this new food. And so I'm not sure it's going to work. And I'm reluctant to just quickly give them these treats again because I don't want them to get a bellyache again. But I was pretty excited that might be an option. So we'll see how that goes. If not, again, we do the best we can. They do have other treats in other packaging. There is a larger plastic tub I could get that is recyclable, but I don't want to get a big plastic tub for the cats. So I'll figure it out and I will check back with you. As far as what we feed them in, we have separate plates and separate forks, glass, ceramic plates, and of course, stainless steel forks. We have a separate selection of plates in the cupboard where I keep their food. That's where we have their plates. That's where we have their forks. And that's what they get every day. So plastic bowls has not been an issue for a long time, but I really invite you to use ceramic plates. It's much better for them because bacteria really tends to cling to plastic. And so it's one of the reasons you really want to feed your dogs and cats food off of things that you can wash really well, like glass or ceramic. And then of course, water. I do give them bowls of water. Of course, everybody who has cats know that they don't necessarily drink out of the bowls of water you give them. They want to drink out of completely different vessels. So we do have other kinds of vessels of water for them around the house, including on the bathroom sinks, because they like to drink near the sink, on the sink, in cups, like ceramic cups, rather than on the floor from a bowl. They're cats. They get what they want because they're cats and they're very picky in particular about those kinds of things. So that's basically what I do with their food. Again, aluminum cans, they go right into the recycling, get rinsed out really well. Someone asked me what to do about the food that they don't eat, the food that's on their plates, because we don't have a garbage can. Nothing wet and disgusting goes into the garbage cans, but we do have a garbage disposal. So on the rare occasion where the cats don't finish their food, Charlie usually licks up everything, we are able to put it down the garbage disposal. But from a zero waste perspective, and if you don't have a garbage disposal and you don't want to put gross, wet food in the garbage, I get it. How about throwing it down the toilet? That's maybe an idea. So again, we do the best we can when it comes to their food, but those are the things that we do for Charlie and Michiko. And now on to the biggest issue related to waste reduction when it comes to cats and dogs and really any animal is what to do with the poo and the pee. Now, again, if the output of high amounts of animal waste bothers you, I have to reiterate that the most amount of fecal and urinal, that's the word, waste being created by animals that could be prevented is that which comes from animals being kept and killed for human consumption and other animal consumption. So again, if we want to reduce the negative impact of animal waste on this planet, we need to look at the 30 some billion land animals we're bringing into this world worldwide only to kill. During their short lifetimes, they produce quantities of excrement that are wreaking havoc on our waterways, air quality, aquatic wildlife. Again, don't do nothing. Do something. So on to cat litter and litter boxes. Let's talk about the latter first. The litter box we've been using for years is indeed plastic. Of course, I bought it years ago, long before my consciousness about plastic was raised. However, it's a sturdy plastic, and I'm not going to throw it out. The whole point, again, with zero waste is to consider how things are manufactured, to consider the longevity of products. And in this case, this particular, or the two particular litter boxes I'm using will last a long time. And so I will be using this for as long as I can. The question will be, what do I do when I have new cats? Just because, again, they're very particular about smells, but I'm not going to worry about that right now. I'll cross that bridge. So the litter boxes we use, and I do recommend having more than one box if you have more than one cat, are covered. This gives them privacy. They like, but it really goes back again to Simon, my previous cat, who used to pee like he was an unneutered male. He used to mark like he was an unneutered male. He would stick his tail straight up and pee straight out. And so a covered litter box helped make sure the urine didn't go all over the place. Now, today we still have the covered litter boxes and I do like them. I don't know, the cats like the privacy. What I did remove though, I don't like a lot of the covered litter boxes have a little plastic door that they go through that keeps it confined inside. They don't need that. So I removed that little door so it's just open in the front, and they have a lot of privacy because they have their own room. The laundry room is where we have the litter boxes, but it's something to consider if you have the litter boxes in a more public space. A cover litter box is nice because if they do pee, or when they do pee and poo, you know, if someone's going into that space, if it's in a bathroom, then you don't necessarily see it. Now, you can get litter boxes from a thrift store or on FreeCycle or on Craigslist, but again, just be mindful that cats are very finicky about their bathroom habits. So it might not go over well if there is a litter box that smells like another cat, but you can wash it. Just don't use bleach or anything like that, because again, cats are very sensitive to their surroundings. Now, as I was doing research for this particular episode, I was really surprised to find that there are very few plastic litter boxes made from recycled plastic. Blows my mind. In this day and age, you would think that manufacturers would use recycled plastic, but I didn't find a lot. I found one that is made from 20% recycled content. You can see that link on the page for today's episode. But other than that, if I were to redo it today, if I were to buy a litter box from scratch today, I would get, this is so fascinating, I can't remember where I got this suggestion from, but I think it's brilliant. Can't take credit for it, but I don't know who to give credit to for it. It is, instead of using a litter box that is sold as a litter box that you find in a, you know, pet supply store, you get a stainless steel steam pan that's used in commercial kitchens. Now, of course, this isn't going to be a covered litter box that I was just talking about, but it's a stainless steel steam pan used in commercial kitchens, and the dimensions are pretty much the same. If you get the large steam pan, they're pretty much the same. I like the one that's tall, so the large one that has that's about 6 inches high. A standard litter box is about 4 or 5 inches high. So the steam pan, the large one, is 6 inches high, which is so perfect. And the rest of the dimensions are pretty much the same. So you can get a stainless steel pan, and even in terms of keeping it clean, stainless steel is a lot better than plastic because it doesn't absorb all of the odors, easy to clean, and pretty awesome. So that's what I would recommend. As for a litter scoop, we also have had litter scoops that we've had forever. They're stainless steel on one end, but of course on the sifting end, it's stainless steel, but there's a plastic handle. So you can look around. The other thing you can do is get something like a stainless steel skimmer that would again be used in commercial kitchens, and that could be your full stainless steel litter scoop. Of course, you want to sift it rather than getting one that has plastic on it. Now, on to the litter. Definitely something I changed since becoming zero waste. I didn't make the connection before. This is what's insane. This is what is so beautiful about this journey that I've been on, is that I'll just keep saying that I made a lot of conscious decisions before, and then there were some things I was just blind to. And this is why it's so important to remember that whether we're talking about making more eco-friendly purchasing decisions, whether we're talking about people becoming vegan, it is so easy to go along and be conscious in some areas and completely unconscious in others. And I'm a perfect example of that. Now, when I was using the litter before, it was a clay-based litter, and I was aware that I didn't like what we were doing, but I just didn't really see there being many other options, or I was just, you know, blocked, or my bandwidth was limited, so I didn't have the time or make the time to go discover new things. But we were using clay-based litter, which was problematic for a lot of reasons. Clay-based litter, first of all, accounts for more than 5 billion pounds of mined clay. So basically, strip mining occurs specifically to mine clay for cat litter. Tears up the land surface, obviously ruining wild space. Not great. It also creates a lot of dust, the litter itself, and can cause respiratory issues in cats and in for the people who also pour and scoop every day. And it's not biodegradable. It clogs up landfills, and it's not going anywhere for a very long time. And so what we were using for a long time was the clay-based litter. We had this little hamper kind of that I think people have used it for diapers. I mean, this one specifically for cat litter, but the top of it, you kind of pull open the little lever, and then you dump the litter in, and there's a plastic bag lining this little hamper, and then you close that top part, and then when that's all filled up, you've got this plastic bag full of crap, literally. And then we would just throw that in the garbage, and that will be sitting in a landmine. And so, you know, we did this for years and years and years and years. And so I didn't want to do this anymore. And this is also part of this whole journey. The cat litter, by the way, in landfills is estimated to contribute 4 million tons of material to landfills. So that's 8 billion pounds of waste from cat litter. And I'd venture to guess that most of it is from clay litter, and we contributed too much of that. Now, litters that are made from plant-based products, such as wheat, corn, ground corn cobs, alfalfa pellets, recycled newspaper pellets, shredded wood, there are a lot of different, more eco-friendly, biodegradable plant-based products. But the problem is if you're taking these and you're also putting them in a plastic bag, they're just going to sit in a landfill if they're not open. They're not going to biodegrade. And remember, we keep talking about the fact that just because something's biodegradable, you could take food, leaves, trees, branches, and put them in a landfill. And if they're not the conditions for them to compost, then they're not going to compost. They're not going to biodegrade. So I did a ton of research on cat litter, and I read a ton of reviews and a lot of scientific papers, and I landed on one that I'm very happy with. If you're using one you love, a very popular one is the world's best cat litter, I think it's called, then keep on keeping on. I'm happy with the one that I discovered, and I'm going to tell you about it. But if you're already using an eco-friendly cat litter, keep using it. But it was just definitely a change for us to get away from the clay litter. The one that I'm using is called OKOCAT. It's Oko cat litter. So OKO, which means eco in German. It was a German company that originally started this product, created this product. I think the company itself is called Healthy Pet. So the product is Oko cat litter. OKO cat, Oko cat. It's number one, it's biodegradable. Number two, there are no harmful chemicals or synthetic scents. Number three, it's made from 100% reclaimed wood, specifically reclaimed fallen softwood trees. It's a blend of like spruce and fir and pine. And the manufacturers don't contribute to cutting down trees, as is the case with some other litter brands that sell wood-based litter. The wood comes from naturally fallen timber or unused lumber that would go to waste. It's then chipped and pelleted along with some, you know, proprietary plant-based binders. So that's what it is. It's from reclaimed wood from fallen timber or unused lumber. Because it's biodegradable, it degrades quickly and cleanly, unlike clay litter that sits in landfills for years. It's definitely more expensive than clay-based litter. We were using Pet Food Express brand, and it was, you know, it was the store brand, so it was pretty cheap. However, because it absorbs like 500% of its weight, it lasts a lot longer. because the absorbency helps extend the life of the litter. So in the end, I think it winds up being either less expensive or the same because it lasts so much longer. A large box we had lasted about 3 months with two cats. That's a pretty good run. Now, there are other advantages as well. Reclaimed wood shavings are lighter than clay, so it's easier to just kind of carry the boxes around. We live 100 steps up from the street, and so carting up the big old bag of clay litter is not fun. It's much easier to carry up this litter. And the other reason is that it comes in a cardboard box that is recyclable, or, as you know, I shred cardboard and compost it. So you can recycle it. You can put it in your city's green bin because the city allows for brown waste, or you can shred it yourself and use it in your own compost bin. There are some, I would find out more about the dyes of the ink on the front. If you could tear off the front and then compost the rest, but it's all cardboard. The point is that it can be recycled. The only thing that might get confusing is there's like 5 or 6 different varieties of the litter they offer. So I'll do my best to explain the difference. I'm not going to give you the whole rundown here. You can go to their website and find out. There's super soft clumping, and there's clumping wood natural. There's natural wood clumping for long hair breeds, and there is natural paper dust free. I'm looking to see if it's clumping. So that one's not clumping. There's a pine that's not clumping. And then there's featherweight clumping. So I do use clumping litter. To get into the details for those who don't know, clumping litter basically means that the moisture, the urine, the wet waste, liquid waste, clumps so that it's just easier to sift and discard. So I do use clumping. I use the super soft clumping. I like the really soft. I don't like it because I'm not using it, but the cats, they talk about how it's good for cats who have delicate paws. Some cats you rescue may have been declawed, and so they have sensitive paws. So it's good for them. It's good for seniors. It's good for kittens. I think all cats like soft, just the feel of a soft litter. And I'm comparing this to the clay. It is so much softer than the clay we used. So we do use the super soft clumping. There's also the featherweight. They're both pretty similar. So super soft clumping is what we use. And I will say that probably the only difference that I am finding, and that David is having a little bit of trouble with, is that because it's lighter, it does track a little bit. So we have, again, the litter boxes are in the laundry room. We have little rugs right outside the litter boxes. And so by the time they leave the box, they've put some of the litter on the rug right outside. And then by the time they get out to the main part of the house, it's pretty much off their paws. I do remember in the past, there are times when, you know, clay, oh my gosh, who was it? Maybe Schuster. The clay can get wet and get in between their little pads on their paws. So that is an issue with the clay. I'm definitely not seeing that at all with the Oko cat. And some of that's because it's so light. So it's a little bit of tracking, a little bit where we can see the little dust bits, the little wood bits, the little shavings. But I'm going to be really honest. They just have a little hand vac next to the litter boxes, or a little broom, a little hand dust pan. And it's a pretty small price to pay for an eco-friendly product. So, you know, weighing keeping a hand vac or a dustpan handy to sweep up some of the litter against the environmental issues with heavier clay litter that maybe doesn't track as much, I'm fine with sweeping up a little wood shavings every few days. The reason I say that David has some problems with it is because David mostly does the litter boxes. So I'm very lucky for that. But I do them too. And you know, he's good about it. But I'm being a little more mindful of going in there and kind of cleaning up just because there's a little bit more of a mess. As I'm recording this, little Meech goes jumping around, trying to get your attention, being a little poodly-doo. Okay, so here's another gift that I've experienced since going zero waste. I had the self-perception, we may have talked about this before, that I shopped locally and didn't order things online very much, even though, you know, I did order things online. I'm not going to pretend I didn't. We definitely did. However, I am shopping even more locally than before, and it's been beautiful. So when it came... Oh. Okay, I kept that in so you could hear. That was the effect of Michiko jumping around trying to get attention and moving on. And so when it came to finding this cat litter, you can go to, well, I went to the Oko Cats website, and you can do the same, and you can go to the Find a Store feature on their website. And so I started calling around, and what was really interesting is that it was a little difficult to find it. It was kind of surprising that some stores around me did carry it, like Sprouts came up as a store that carried it, but they didn't carry the Super Soft. And I really did want the Super Soft. And one of the reasons you want to stick with the litter that you've started them on is because with cats, it does take a while to transition them to a new litter. You don't just, again, for those who are still listening who are not cat people, or if you have never adopted cats and you're considering doing so, with the litter, you don't just switch out the litter that quickly. You've gotten the sense that cats are sensitive in a very good way. They should be sensitive. We're all sensitive to our surroundings and change. And they're sensitive to it especially. So you don't just dump out old litter. Like, I wouldn't have just dumped out their clay litter and then threw in this brand new litter. They're pretty resilient, my cats, and a lot of cats are. But you slowly change it. So I started putting a quarter of the Oko cat, and then half, and then three quarters, and then we were fully converted. So that's why, you know, just because one store could carry this other kind, and even though it was probably pretty similar, I didn't want to just say, sure, I'll take the pine, whatever. I wanted specifically the Super Soft that we've been using, that they transitioned to and that they liked. So I would ask those stores if they could please order the Super Soft, since clearly they were able to get Oko Cat. If they had a distributor that sold Eco Cat to them, or Oko Cat, why couldn't they just get the Super Soft? And they couldn't. So kept calling around and finally called a store in Oakland, not far from me, called Paws and Claws. And I used to go to Paws and Claws. Again, this is another example. It's kind of in the same neighborhood that I used to be in before that I've talked about with the food mill. It's in the Diamond Fruitvale area. And I used to go there all the time. It's a lesbian-owned store. I was friendly with especially one of them, with Ruth. She's vegetarian. She goes back and forth whenever she sees me. She's like, oh, I need to go vegetarian again. Like, so it's really good for her to see me again. And she said the same thing when I saw her the other day. And it's lovely because they are truly, truly independently owned. We used to go to Pet Food Express, and we still get some of the food from Pet Food Express, although I might see what their prices are now. I might be able to get them from Paws and Claws, the food from Paws and Claws, so that I can support an independently owned store. Pet Food Express, I love. Their customer service is fantastic. Their prices are very good. It's just a lovely experience, and they are a franchise. So you are technically supporting an independent, well, you're supporting a locally owned store, because I do know the person who owns that particular store I used to go to here in Oakland. I was getting the litter from before, but this is truly an independently owned store. And so I love that. So the point is, you would be surprised. Like, you might be surprised that I was calling larger stores and they couldn't order it. And this little tiny store was able to order it for me. So there are also coupons on their website, on Oko Cat's website, so you can get a coupon, at least to try it out, especially if you're going to try it out for your cats and transition them. Of course, you want to do it and you want to know that it's going to work. So I'm telling you that I loved it and the cats love it. Again, I don't use it personally, but I do love it. So go to Oko Cat's website and see if you can find it near you. If you can't, you should be able to find another eco-friendly litter near you. You should be able to. It's not like this is the only one. This is just the one that I liked. You might be surprised also that there might be litter in the bulk section. Again, I say this just because you don't know until you ask. Now, some of the ones that are going to be in the bulk sections are probably going to be clay-based, but do your best. If it reduces plastic, you know, just again, don't do nothing because you can't do everything, do something, anything. So do your best. And maybe when you are disposing of the clay, use a biodegradable bag that I did not use, or a paper bag. So at least it breaks down. Yeah, we just do the best we can. Now, what to do with the litter is the big question. Many eco-friendly litters will say they're flushable, and Oko Cat is no exception there. However, here are the caveats. If you have a septic system, you want to make sure that you're flushing in small amounts. Even if you have a municipal sewer system, you want to make sure you're flushing in small amounts because you don't want to clog up your plumbing, just as you don't want to clog up your plumbing in general. So just gauge how much would fit into your toilet. You might do a couple flushes, and hopefully you have a low flush toilet so that or low water toilet, so you're not using a lot of water every time you flush. But that is something to consider, is not kind of overdoing it. Just because it's flushable doesn't mean you want to put a ton in. Now, what about the poo itself? You will often hear people say that, yes, you can flush dog poo, but you cannot flush cat poo. And sometimes people just stop there and they don't say anymore. And people go, oh, okay, I won't flush my cat poo. Now, in the state of California, it has a referendum against flushing cat litter for protection of the sea lion population, since cat feces was associated with harming sea lions. But that's not the whole story. So here's what's going on. There's a parasite called Toxoplasma gondii, which causes the disease toxoplasmosis. You would have heard of toxoplasmosis, of course. The parasite Toxoplasma gondii, also abbreviated to T. gondii, which is what we're going to call it now, is worldwide, and it can infect warm-blooded animals, including humans, as you probably know. People can contract toxoplasmosis eating undercooked meat that contains T. gondii or consuming raw milk or unpasteurized milk. Vegetables can also be contaminated with T. gondii, but of course with all foodborne illnesses, it's because the vegetables have been contaminated. Remember that the worst risk of an infestation in plant foods in terms of what overruns plant foods would be aphids, or you might get mold, but you don't get these zoonotic diseases, which are animal-based. So toxoplasmosis is an animal-based zoonotic disease. So of course, your risk of foodborne illnesses is greatly reduced when you're not eating animal products. Anyway, I'll spare you the details of how the parasite reproduces. But in short, if a cat eats a prey animal like a mouse or a rat infected with T. gondii or eats raw meat on a regular basis, then he may wind up carrying the parasite, which reproduces in the cat's digestive tract and which gets excreted in their feces. The period by which a cat would finish excreting this parasite after consuming the infected animal would be about 2 weeks. However, once they're excreted, these parasites are very hardy and they can survive in the environment for up to a year. So how do you prevent this in cats? That's the big question. Prevention is twofold. Number one is reducing exposure to the parasite, and number two is reducing the shedding of the parasite into the environment. So for number one, cats should preferably be fed commercially prepared cooked foods, because appropriate heating inactivates any T. gondii cysts that may be present. And they shouldn't be allowed to eat uncooked meat, or they shouldn't be allowed to eat animals considered the intermediate hosts of T. gondii, like rodents. So the number one thing is you want to prevent them from getting it in the first place, which means how they would consume it. And then number two is not having the infected poop excreted into the environment. Now, number two became an issue in California when it became evident that otters and other marine animals were being infected and dying from exposure to T. gondii. So treated sewage water, unfortunately, the parasite isn't destroyed during the treatment process, the sewage treatment process. And the treated sewage water flows into the ocean in California. So because the parasite isn't destroyed during that treatment process, infected cat feces was pointed to, although not definitively, as the culprit. Now, you keep hearing me say infected cat, infected prey animals, infected feces, and that's a really important distinction to make. I am the last person who would ever advocate harming wildlife, but we need to be clear that toxoplasmosis is only released into the environment if your cat has toxoplasmosis. If your cat is indoors, never eats rodents, doesn't eat raw meat, it's very unlikely that your cat has toxoplasmosis or has been infected by the parasite Toxoplasma gondii. In fact, according to Cornell University College of Veterinary Medicine, quote, Indoor cats that do not hunt prey or consume raw meat are unlikely to be infected with T. gondii. And if you want to be 100% certain, you can test your cat for it. If your cat does have it, it's treatable with antibiotics. And so in the end, it's your call to make. But I think it's really important to have all the data before making decisions or before espousing information that's only half understood or half true. If a cat hasn't been exposed to or infected with Toxoplasma gondii, their feces would not contain the parasite or the parasite's eggs. Thus, the parasite can't harm wildlife because it's, even though their waste may be excreted into the environment, there's no infection. Does that make sense? So to recap, if you decide to flush your cat poo, you will very much reduce the amount of cat litter that goes into the landfill, but perhaps first make sure you prevent your kitty from being exposed to T. gondii in the first place and perhaps get them tested. Now, I have to say this. In an effort to reduce waste, and just because they think it's kind of cute and cool, some people have already been flushing their cat's poo because they've toilet trained their cat. And I have to say that I am not an advocate of this. I think it goes against the natural behavior of cats who use their peeing and pooing as a way to mark and detect their territory. Yes, also in an artificial litter box. It seems weird, but it's still just really a huge part of their instinct. And I think it can be really stressful for them, which could manifest in other anomalous behaviors. So I have already established throughout this entire episode that cats are very sensitive. I do not think that it's the right thing to encourage them to use the toilet, the human toilet. And I think also you can miss out on detecting when things aren't right, like if they have a urinary tract infection or their feces are too hard or they're too soft. So I watch everything. I'm always watching that. And that's just a huge way to determine if they're doing well, how much they're peeing, how soft their poop is, I mean, et cetera. So I just wanted to say that because I know some people have asked that question, and there's my answer. So a quick note also on composting kitty litter, because I'm sure I know people have asked me that as well. Regarding OcoCat, the litter itself is completely biodegradable. However, it's not recommended that you put used litter like feces and urine clumps in your, mostly the feces you want to watch because specifically of what can be in the feces more than the urine. So you don't want to put that in your regular compost bin. There are other parasites to be concerned about that can't be destroyed in your home compost bin. It just wouldn't get hot enough. Now, you can have an entirely separate compost system for cat waste. If you have the yard space for it, go for it. There are definitely people who online show you how to do this. I wouldn't recommend using the compost for vegetable gardens, but even if you do that, you can still let it sit for 6 months. It has to just get hot enough and so that you destroy any of the parasites that would then be problematic in growing vegetables. But there is a USDA protocol to make sure the compost is safe for use in vegetable gardens. But aside from that, you can just use it in ornamental gardens. And I include a link on the page for today's website to a website that tells you how to do this. So just by staying alive, we all have an ecological footprint on this earth. It's not that we can make a difference. It's that we do make a difference. All we get to decide is, do we want that difference to be negative or positive? There are many things we can do to make a positive difference and to at least mitigate our negative impact. And I hope some of these suggestions are helpful to you. Let me know your thoughts and suggestions. Make sure you leave comments on the page at joyfulvegan.com. And of course, please share this information with others. Subscribe to this podcast, support it. Thank you to everybody who is supporting this podcast. And I always want to hear from you and know what other kinds of episodes you're looking for. I'm very much looking forward to doing the next episode on vegan in Vietnam. I'm actually watching the Ken Burns Vietnam special again. If you haven't watched it, the PBS documentary that was made about the Vietnam War. It's called the Vietnam War. And it's harrowing, but it is incredible. And it was just incredible to be in so many of the places the special talks about. And so I'm watching it again because I fell in love with Vietnam and I want you to as well. So go over to cpgvegantrips.com. At least look at the itinerary because we have some specials that we're running for these trips, especially Vietnam and Thailand. I think you'll want to take a look. All right. Thanks, everybody, for the animals. This is Colleen Patrick-Gaudreau. Thanks for listening.